You go up 19-0 against any team, and then to lose it, I don't think we scored in the second half. We lost to 21-19. You're thinking, Jesus Christ, are we ever, ever going to beat this mob?
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
Hello and welcome to House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. We've got a really good show coming up for you all. In just a moment, myself and Ronan Omani will be joined from Australia by Rob Kearney for a chat about how he's getting on down under. In part two, we'll hear from Sam Warburton, discuss Ireland's Six Nations win over Italy, and a little bit about the upcoming semi-finals for Leinster and Ulster. But first, Ronan, we'll start off and keep the Munster fans happy. What did you make of that 27-3 win for Munster in the RDS yesterday?
Yeah, pretty pleasing from a Munster point of view, I think. You know, look, we're under no illusion that we had a fully stacked side, and Leinster probably playing their second string team, trying to get game time into the likes of James Ryan and Gary Ringrose going into the semi-finals this weekend. So look, a pleasing win. I suppose it's going to heal any kind of psychological scars that would have been there over the last couple of months and years, that, you know, there was a lot of talk in the media about Leinster winning the last consecutive 10 games against Munster. So, you know, it's good for them to get one over, and, you know, a good couple of young lads on the bench who got a bit of game time and got the experience beating Leinster. So it'll be good for them, and good for them at the start of their careers to experience that as well.
Yeah, I'd say there was a feeling in the Munster change room afterwards. Probably, I'd imagine that, you know, they wish they could have done that when they met them in the final. I did think they played an awful lot better. I realised that there was a lot of rotation going on in that Leinster side, but it was a more complete performance by Munster than that final, definitely.
It was, and I suppose with the way the Rainbow Cup is going and it's turned into a small bit of a shambles, that we don't know whether a come or a going or how many games are going to be in it, that look, Munster have the luxury of going full strength in these competitions because they have nothing else. Obviously Leinster went second string because they've got La Rochelle to look La Rochelle like around the corner, so it was a good opportunity for them to play with no real pressure and to express themselves. And I know they talked a lot during the week about retaining possession and holding on to possession because they found it so hard to get the ball off Leinster last month in the final. So they did it a little bit better. They kept the ball in hand a little bit more, and I think Joey settled in a little bit better into 10 as well. He seems a lot more comfortable in himself, and the more he gets, the more game time he gets, I think the better team will start moving as well.
Yeah, definitely. And Munster probably left a couple of opportunities out there as well. There was a number of times they were in the Leinster 22 and they turned the ball over. You know, even at the end, they had that rolling maul that went down.
Yeah.
Like, they probably did leave a couple of scores out there as well, even though it was a big enough win.
Yeah, they left a couple of scores out there. But look, I suppose from a Leinster point of view, it's going to be a big learning curve for the younger lads. They're probably down to their fifth choice out half. You know, did a couple of changes there before the game started. And, you know, it's going to be very good for those younger players in Leinster to experience that type of environment and get them up to scratch to what's needed to play in these high-level inter-pro games. But look, pleasing from a Leinster point of view, again, those scars that would have been there of games gone by, a bit of healing done, and a win. But in a sense, with the Rainbow Cup, you would like to see maybe if they started the bench and put some of the more experienced players on the bench and give them 20 minutes. Joe, I would like to see Craig Casey got a full 60 minutes, 70 minutes against Leinster side, and the same with Dermot Barron on the bench and a couple of these younger lads. You know, you need to really let them experience what it's like, the intensity of these inter-pro games.
Yeah, but I'd say from Van Graham and, you know, Stephen Larkham's, you know, position, I'd say they're just thinking we need to break the cycle of Leinster winning, you know, kicking on to next year, and they have done that. But the bigger difference actually I saw as well, just from the performance, and, you know, I realised it wasn't the same intensity as that final, but I did think that Munster caused a lot more issues at the breakdown. You know, you saw Tighe, Damien Delande got a couple of really good turnovers on the ground. They seemed to pick their times better, and that they got a bit of inroads there.
Yeah, they did. Tighe Byrne at it again. He's an absolute freak. And how many times we've chatted about him being, he's just sensational on the ground. And he's one of these players, like Porter for Leinster, when they get over the ball, they're literally impossible to move. Munster are definitely more accurate around that. They held on to the ball a lot better. They just they seem like they weren't playing with major constraints, you know, in the final last month. They seem like a team that are under pressure from the get-go. Well, I think, you know, they're a bit more relaxed looking. They obviously, as we talked about the Rainbow Cup, there probably wasn't as much pressure on them to perform, but and they had a full strength team against what would be a second string Leinster team. So, you know, they're probably looking and going, this is one we should take advantage of, and they did, and they won convincingly, really.
Definitely. And speaking of holding on to the ball, I saw CJ Stander kept the match ball after the game. Well, obviously, you know, for him, he's been on the receiving end of a number of losses against Leinster, so definitely a nice one for him before he flies back home to have gotten one up over the old rivals.
It is, and as you talk about with Rob, about trying to beat New Zealand many times and then eventually getting there and doing it, I suppose it's on a smaller scale, it's similar with Munster-Leinster. You know, CJ's been on the back of 8 or 9 losses now against Leinster, and then you get a win no matter what way it comes or in what tournament it comes in. They all count and they're all special. These, you know yourself from playing against Munster, and I'd know on the other side as well. It's there's always something at stake. It's never a dead rubber as such. So there's always a good intense rivalry there. Yeah,
definitely. There was a good win for Connacht over Ulster as well. They scored a try at the death up in Belfast, and it made for good viewing that game. In fairness to both of those sides, they both played some great rugby during that match.
Yeah, I love watching Connacht play. They can be so exciting, and we chatted about earlier that on their day they can perform and beat any team. But I think Nigel Carlin's done an unbelievable job with their attack. You know, regarding entertainment value, they always produce it. They're always exciting to watch, and they're able to run the ball from anywhere, and they're able to score choice from anywhere. And it was interesting as well to see him use the new law of variations that are coming in the captain's challenge, and you know, get a penalty and eventually get down the pitch and be able to win the game. It just shows that a couple of these new law of variations coming in are going to work. And you know, we haven't seen anyone get a red card yet, you know, and especially with all the high tackles. You were the king of the high tackle back in the day. For
Jesus, don't be bringing that stuff up on the show now. Come on.
Sorry. No, I just remember you're hitting Damien Hyland when he played Edinburgh. But he bounced off the ground, like you hit him.
Yeah, he did. To be fair,
probably one of the best shots. I remember Felix Jones showing to me. He's like, "We need more as a back three. We need more aggressiveness like this in our defence." I remember him showing to me. And your man just bounced off the ground. I was like, "How the hell is he after getting up after that?"
I know. Yeah, I came out worse, unfortunately, from that. Yeah. But for Ulster heading into next Friday, this semi-final, you know, not ideal for them to lose the game, but you could say the same about Leinster, you know, losing to Munster. But I'm sure that'll just be a clean slate for both teams. And obviously, the focus for both of the sides was on the semi this week.
Yeah, 100%. As we said, Leinster point of view, obviously they want to get a win, but look, they're trying to get game time into James Ryan, I know Caelan Darris pulled out just before the game,
and into
Gary Ringrose, who's captain of the side. They never want to lose to Munster, but to get game time into these lads going into La Rochelle are going to be, it's just going to be an unbelievable ask, you know, and to have Gary and to have James Ryan getting game time under their belt going into a starting team next week is key for Leinster, so they'll be happy to get the boys through the game.
For sure. Good stuff. Right, let's get Rob Kearney on.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
Rob, how are you? Great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Not at all. Thanks for having me on, lads.
How's all with you? You're currently quarantining for 3 days in a hotel room, I believe.
Yeah, it's all a bit mental. So there was one single case in Perth last week. So they shut the whole of Perth down for 3 days. So we've a semi-final in Canberra against the Brumbies this weekend. So we had to fly out on Sunday. Because we wouldn't have been allowed to train in Perth. There's no exemptions for professional sports teams like there is back home. So we got out of there, but we still have to quarantine in a hotel here for 3 days, which is going to be some crack.
Jesus, that'll be tough, but at least you mentioned you're able to get out and train, is it? You can do a bit of exercise every day?
Yeah, so I think we're allowed out for training for maybe 3 hours in the morning time. Because we wouldn't have been allowed out in Perth. Everyone's like locked down. You can't leave the house at all. So I think that's the reason why we came here a little bit early.
Very good. You know what? We actually, so last week we had Mike Ross on the show and we were going over a couple of stories with him. And that incident popped up where you and me bought those sweets in the joke shop. And Joe,
do you know what? I was only watching it back this morning. Joe tagged me in it. That was the funniest thing ever. But I didn't actually realize that was the last time you played for Ireland.
No, it wasn't. That was just a bit of salt and pepper to make the story a bit better.
Yeah, but you remember Joe did say, he was like, yeah, funny, isn't it, Ferg? It's the last time you'll fucking play for Ireland.
Yeah, that was what he said. I know, yeah. He wasn't really that far wrong. In terms of starts, I don't think there was that many more, but I think it was still worth it in my eyes.
Yeah, it was. It's not often you get one up on him.
No, you're a big United fan though, Rob, as people might know from your social media. What did you make of the whole Super League fiasco?
John, I haven't been following it too much. I thought, like, Monday Night Football now has just turned into the best bit of TV there is out there at the moment. It's funny when you see the likes of Gary Neville, Jamie Carragher, the power that they have over English football at the moment.
Yeah.
I think without those two going as strongly as they did, the Super League could still potentially be going ahead at the moment.
I know, it's scary, isn't it, how much power those guys hold at the moment. Like, But I think that whole situation, it was great to see because it sums up the power of the fans as well. You know, you saw the groups that were, all protesting outside Old Trafford, you know, saying that they wanted to get rid of the shareholders and all that type of stuff. And really, like, if you take that away from, you know, even the rugby side, you take the fans away, you know, it turns into a pretty soulless game for everyone. And I realise that the footballers are making a lot of money, but it was just great to see how much weight their opinions held.
Yeah, it does. And it shows, I suppose, you know, you've got these wealthy owners who come in and they're treating it solely as a business. They just want to make money. And that's probably the problem that football has gotten into over the last few years, that you've got guys who are taking over the country who aren't necessarily supporters of the game. They don't really care too much about the future of the game. The only thing that they care about is the revenue at the end of the year. And I think football's taken a big step towards going back, giving the fans, you know, the ownership of the game. Because at the end of the day, they're the true stakeholders of any football club.
Mm. Who would have thought we would have been dialing you in from Australia to talk about the Premier League and soccer? That would have been an outside bet.
Definitely not me.
But
dialing me in to talk anything about soccer, I didn't think you would.
I know. Tell us, how are you enjoying it over there? Anyway, I'm interested here because I saw you have done one or two things. You were talking to Off the Ball and one or two others. But just for our listeners, you know, how have you enjoyed the change? You know, obviously you're later on in your career, but it seems like you've taken to it like a duck to water. And how's it been for you?
Yeah, it's been incredible. It's been such a breath of fresh air for me. You know, I think we'd obviously spoken back at the time the two of us were finishing it up. And, you know, I didn't really want to finish up. I felt as if I could still have gone on for another season. There was still a bit of fire burning there to go and try and do something new. And the opportunity only came around really late. I guess I'd sort of resigned to the fact a little bit that I was going to be retiring alongside you in September time. You know, and then the opportunity came up and it was too good to turn down. And looking back on it now, I've just been so blessed with the timing of it. You know, if I had to choose 6 months to leave Ireland over the last 100 years, this would have been the 6 months to leave. So I just feel really lucky that everything fell into place and timing worked out as well as it did.
Rob, after experience in life outside of Leinster, would if you had your time over, would you have done this a bit sooner?
You know what, I've loved it and I do love it, and it's so nice to get to a new country, a new environment, get into a new team. The climate is obviously pretty incredible too, but I was always a big believer that you know, not to rub it into a Munster man now, but there's no substitute for medals.
Hold on, we might win the Rainbow Cup yet.
Well, you got off to some start last night, that's for sure. But no, listen, I've been so lucky to, even in the latter parts of my year, 2018, 19, you know, win some medals. And I think at the end of the day, well, certainly for me, medals were the only thing that mattered. And had I been a part maybe of a team in a Leinster era that wasn't going as well and wasn't as successful, well, then maybe I might have looked to move away sooner. But certainly I don't have any regrets about not doing this sooner on in my career.
Spot on.
Yeah, I must say, going back on that, what you mentioned there about the conversation we had, because I remember when you said it to me in the gym, you were like, listen, you didn't know what you were going to do, whether you're going to finish or you were going to try kick on. And I could always sense that you did want to continue playing. And then when you said to me one day, I think we were paired up in a gym session, that the Western Force had been on and there was going to be an offer there, I remember just going, what is going on? Because in my head, I couldn't fathom that, you know, because I was fully ready to kind of go. And really, like, it has worked out unbelievably well for you. You go over to a country, you know, granted you have the 14-day quarantine, but COVID-free, you know, lovely, beautiful climate. It looks like a great bunch of lads, and you know, now you're in a semi there, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it is. And listen, I was exactly like you were in September. I'd fully come around to the fact that I was going to be finishing up. And, you know, I left Leinster in September, so I was effectively on my own for October, November, December. And it was getting cold in the mornings, and I was out training on my own and in the gym on my own. And I was thinking, Jesus Christ, what have you gotten yourself into? You're going over here, you're not training with a team for 4 months, and then you're going to play Super Rugby. You know, are you mad in the head? But thankfully, you know, it worked out pretty well for me.
Yeah, defo. Like, just before we go into a bit more of the Western Force's kind of position at the moment and how things have gone so far, will you kind of tell the listeners briefly on just our finish in Leinster, obviously, so we went right up through school together. You know, you broke into Leinster before me. We were lucky enough to stay there for the whole time. But our finish in the, you know, obviously we're both, I can speak for both, was very grateful. The fact that we got to lift the trophy, signing on for that last 3 months, that was cool. But the finish for us was, it was bizarre, is the only way to describe it. You know, but between Christy Moore coming in for that, you know, that gig that he did for us in UCD, and then afterwards, just the finish after we got knocked out by Saris. Can you just, like, tell the listeners kind of what exactly it was like for you, that kind of strange way that it finished up?
Yeah, like, it was bizarre. It was so weird. I think, you know, as players, you always, you know, you sometimes think about how you're going to go out on the terms you're going to go out on. And, you know, you fantasize a little bit over the fairy tale ending. You know, not everyone can have the sign off that O'Driscoll did. But, you know, you think sometimes you might get something in between where you play your last game for Leinster and you're subbed off and you get to thank the fans and they get to thank you and whatnot. And you think you might be playing in the game. So, you know, for us going onto a field in our tracksuits in an empty stadium, you know, lifting the trophy obviously was unbelievable and we were both privileged to do it. But you're also a little bit uncomfortable in your tracksuit with 23 guys who have just played a game. They've won the trophy and then you're getting asked to lift it. So, you know, that felt a little bit strange too. I wouldn't say I felt like a fraud, but did make me feel very uncomfortable that they'd put this massive effort in for 80 minutes, but we're the two lads who swan onto the field in our trackies and lift the trophy.
Definitely. And even the, you know, go in and we talked to the lads and said our thank yous to the players and staff. And we walked out of the building and there was no, you know, go for dinner with a couple of the team or a get together, you know, like a normal end of the season when people finish. Like, that was probably the strangest thing for me, just getting into my car and leaving. And that was just it. Like, this just shut off, you know?
Yeah, and, like, you know, because we were in lockdown and we couldn't really do anything, you know, I'd say there's 90% of the squad that I haven't seen since the changing room after the Saracens game. And, you know, that's pretty tough to take because, you know, worst case scenario, you think you might all be able to go to the pub and have a massive piss up and have a few pints and reminisce about the old days. But there wasn't even any of that. And at the time you say, oh, no, we'll make sure we get a get together in the Christmas party. But time goes on and people move on. And, you know, there'll be a lot of those boys that we won't see for, you know, a long time again. And that does hurt. It makes it a little bit more difficult. But that's just part of the times that we're living in, I guess, isn't it? You just got to roll with it and take it as it comes.
Yeah, and watching over the years, like, no matter how decorated you are as a player, there's very few players who get a fairy tale ending. As you said, Brian O'Driscoll got a bit of a parade right inside the Aviva Stadium, but there's very few players who go out on their own terms, as in, you know, you talk about COVID and look at someone like Paul O'Connell, and, you know, he went out with an injury and signed for Toulon and couldn't end up going through with it. And there is very few players who get that fairy tale ending from their home club. So, yeah, it is hard to get out of the game with that.
100%. You were probably...
Yeah, but I think in that sort of situation, you know, you have to... And definitely what I did, I was just so grateful of the previous 15 years and all the game that had given me, as opposed to how it ended in the last month. So you have to be a little bit philosophical about it and say, okay, the ending was shit, but, you know, some of the days that I've had in the previous 15 years were unbelievable.
Yeah, couldn't agree with you more. I think, you know, one game or one small period of a long career doesn't define anything. It's the period before that. So I can vouch for you on that one there. Are you still watching? Would you watch any of the games aired over there, like Irish games? Did you watch any of the Champions Cup games, even whether it was, you know, Leinster, Munster, or any of that?
Yeah, I still watch all of them. You know, I still feel pretty heavily invested in watching all the games. And I think the fact that Dave is playing in all of them, that, you know, there's the extra onus on me there that I want to watch those. But the game last night, say, was on at 3 o'clock in the morning, so I didn't watch it. But I got up early this morning and watched it straight back. So I've watched all the games after them. Still watch a fair bit of the other Champions Cup games. You know, I would find it hard just to completely switch off and not watch any of the games again. So it's nice to still be able to watch them, even though I'm from afar.
Yeah, defo. And Dave is flying, in fairness. And, you know, hopefully he will be playing in these latter games of the Champions Cup as well. Just, I'm going to touch on your book, Rob, here briefly. So in your book, you know, you did mention that you kind of, there was a sense that you were never kind of truly settling, even though, you know, we just mentioned earlier on, you won so many trophies. You know, it's widely known amongst the rugby community that you are the most decorated player in Irish rugby history. You do rub Johnny and Draco's nose in that a fair bit as well on the golf course. But, you know, that is a bit of a team that you had. Like, was it because you were always looking at, you know, what was coming underneath you, or why was that your mentality?
I think when you win trophies, and you'll vouch for this, you get greedy, don't you? And you get such a high from winning trophies that once you win one, the only thing that matters is the next one, and you want to keep doing it. You know, I've been so lucky in terms of, you know, I think I've missed something like 30 games for Ireland, but I haven't missed too many big ones where there's been medals or a championship or big Six Nations or some of those games against the All Blacks. I've been fit and available for all of those. So, and there's a huge element of luck in that as well. You know, I could easily have missed, of those 30 games that I've missed, some of those could have been in the 2018 Grand Slam or 2009 Grand Slam or some of those All Blacks games. So again, I'm just very, very grateful that I was fit and available for some of the really big games that had allowed me to pick up some of those medals.
Rob, obviously playing with your own brother Dave in the back three, was there ever a stage in your career when you thought, fuck, my jersey could be under threat here from my own brother?
No.
That was that.
No. You know, he's I think we're always very lucky that that he was an out-and-out winger and, yeah, and I was an out-and-out fullback. Now, I did absolutely have the top-end pace to play in the wing. I could run a 10 metres per second, no problem. We were always pretty lucky that the two of us were generally fighting for the same position. Now, there was times, you know, in Leinster towards the end when myself and Jordan were battling out for that 15 jersey, and if I started, he might sometimes move to the wing and Dave would get nudged out or vice versa. And that did make it a little bit more difficult for some of the big games if I was in and he wasn't, or if he was in and I wasn't. You know, it might hurt a little bit more, but I think all in all, we were pretty lucky that the two of us never had to go head to head for a jersey on too many occasions.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, talking about those younger guys coming through, I suppose, you know, in fairness, Ireland had a brilliant finish to the Six Nations, but do you ever think that there is an appreciation for what you did for Ireland more after you retired, rather than when you were still playing? Do you ever think that? Because I think that there is probably, you know, there's opinion out there, you know, once you finished, I think there was times when the Irish public maybe took you for granted as, you know, what you did, you know, at fullback for Ireland for so long. I think when, you know, fans and supporters get used to seeing something, and then I suppose once you were gone, and obviously Hugo, in fairness, he has done brilliant in the period he's had, but there was a period there where, you know, Ireland were struggling in that position.
I don't necessarily think that's probably a question for me to answer outright. I think you see it in sport an awful lot. Where a player or a competitor has been around for so long and they become a part of the furniture a little bit within an organization or within a team. I think at times we can take people for granted. And as you say, it's only when they're gone that you think, oh, maybe, you know, actually what he did add a little bit more value to the team. To be fair to Hugo, he's come in, he's done unbelievable work. He's had a superb Six Nations. He's still young and he's only going to keep growing in that position.
Yeah, defo. I think they've got some really exciting younger guys coming through. Like you mentioned, Jordan and, Hugo and, you know, even the likes of Shane Daly. I thought he had a brilliant game for Munster. They're guys coming through in that position that will be good. But, you know, back to your own career, Rob. And this is, you know, just for listeners and people that are watching, like, what is the biggest sense of satisfaction you ever had after a match, you know, and what was it kind of connected to?
There's probably two for me. I think the 2016 game against the All Blacks in Chicago was pretty big for me. I was coming under a lot of heat. My body was breaking down a fair bit in 2015. I wasn't able to string too many matches together. And I think that game in Chicago was the one time that I felt in my career that my position was massively under threat. And I knew it going out onto the game. So to be able to go out then and put in a good performance on a really big game where the team won and we made history was pretty nice for me. 2018, I think, was probably the one moment of my whole career that I take so much pride from, you know, to have been able to be a part of a Grand Slam team in 2009 and then to go and do it again in 2018 and put in a really pretty solid tournament in terms of my own performances and to know that you can do that on the big stage 9 years later, given some of the moments and dips in form and injury that I've been through the years previous to that, you know, and I don't know how old I was, maybe 32. That was definitely the one year that I take most satisfaction from.
Yeah, definitely. I think those, you know, games against the All Blacks, Like, you know, I remember that three test tour that we were on. We were rooming together for the entire thing. And like, God, like we were traveling around to some of the, like, and the thing is, New Zealand is a beautiful country, but in the winter time down there, is some of the spots can be pretty bleak, and the All Blacks are only getting going really with their season. Yeah. So, and you're coming to the tail end of a Pro 14 or a European Cup, and really the squad going over there was a bit exhausted mentally and physically, even though we ran them close in the second game. But the third game, Rob, if you remember, like there was actually one line because we lost in the third game 60-0 and we nearly beat them in the second game. Mm-hmm. So guys' heads were gone, and like lads pretty much had the flip-flops on ready to go on their holidays, you know, and just get out of there. But I remember Dricko, I remember Ritalak just he ghosted through a gap and just like dummied one of the backs and goes through a gap from like 40 metres in. And this was at like 40.
Yeah, he dummied you.
45, no. You still missed him at the back, the goalkeeper. But I remember Dricko under the post, and like, what does a captain say, you know, to a team that's losing 45-0? And I remember him going, lads, I know things have gone to shit, but that was particularly fucking bad.
I'll never forget that game. That was it just felt like we spent the whole game under our sticks. And I think the biggest mistake was we sort of poked the bear the week before, and that game we should have won. You know, to be fair to Nigel Owen's, a really good ref, but he actually rode us at a scrum up the field that we should have got a penalty for, and they went up the other end and Dan Carter kicked a drop goal. So we all thought, yeah, we're in this, you know, we just do the same next week and we'll bang in there again, we might run them close. They came out of the blocks and they smoked us 60 points to nil.
I know, and that, I suppose that this point is the lead on to what you just talked about there, because the journey of that, and I wasn't involved in the game where Ireland already beat them during Joe Schmidt's first November. So I remember I missed out in that game. I'd broken my hand and you guys nearly beat them. Remember they had the kick in the corner. Aaron Cruden had another opportunity. Like that was just like for them to come back in the position they did. But then you roll on another number of years and we beat them twice and you're involved in those days. Like that was just a pretty cool journey to have been on there.
Yeah, it was. I think that game in Aviva was, you know, probably the worst defeat of my career. You go up 19-0 against any team, and then to lose it, I don't think we scored in the second half. We lost to 21-19. You're thinking, Jesus Christ, are we ever going to beat this mob? You know, so you look back on that 60 points to nil, I think we learned a huge amount from it. And even in you know, the 3, 4, 5 years after that, that 60-0 game was referenced a lot in our team meetings with Joe. You know, I think it took me 10 times before we actually beat them. So, you know, to get one up on that team and then subsequently go and do it a second time was, I think it was a massive thing for Irish rugby.
Yeah, defo. I actually went to the game in 2018, and I hadn't been to many games when I was still playing, and like to see the entire stadium stay in their seats afterwards and everyone sing the Fields of Athenry, like I don't think on TV, I hadn't seen scenes like that in Lansdowne Road for so many years. It was just such a special day, I'd say, to be involved in.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And it was really the first, you know, one of the first big days that we got to have out in the Aviva. You know, we won the Grand Slam 2018 in Twickenham, 2009 in Cardiff. The championships were both Paris and Edinburgh. So the Aviva never really got to experience one of those really big days. You know, so it was unbelievable that we actually got to have one of those massive days where we either won a trophy or toppled off New Zealand, for it to happen in the Aviva, you know, especially after the first time we beaten them was in Chicago. So the Aviva never got to really experience any of those really, really big days.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It's one of those, I think it was one of those iconic days for Irish rugby. But we'll have to touch on the Lions, Rob, as well, because obviously as a tourist, the last time the Lions were down in South Africa. You were there in 2009, and I remember vividly actually visiting you in hospital. I'm pretty sure I went in with one of your buddies from school. I think it could have been Andrew Lynch, and we went into hospital.
The grapefruit was out.
Yeah, you had the mumps. So Rob had the mumps, yeah. And you know, were you European Player of the Year that year, or you'd had a great season and you were in a great position to go, but.
No, I wasn't European player that year. No, it was off the back of the 2009 Grand Slam. Leinster had won the Heineken Cup. I was in a pretty good position to go. Obviously, I was still pretty young, so you're never sure that you were going to get picked on it. But then after that quarterfinal game, I got hit with the mumps, and I think I was in Blackrock Clinic for 2 weeks. I was sick as a dog, and you were one of the few to come in and visit me. Thanks for that.
Yeah, no worries, man. But isn't that that tour though? You know, because I saw clips of the 97 Lions there. Mm. It was like a classics on Sky Sports. It does seem like South Africa is a particularly special place, and I know that like all the three tours they go on in whatever cycle you manage to get, but South Africa does seem pretty special. Like how much of a difference is it going to be not having those fans there, because you experienced all that and the, you know, just the crazed fans that go over there and the support that it gets, that's a big part that a lot of guys aren't going to experience.
Yeah, it is, and it's really unfortunate because, you know, the Lions supporters are incredible. I don't know where they all come out from, but you know, you go to those stadiums and a lot of the time there's more red in the stadium than there is the opposition colour. The South Africans are pretty hostile as a group of fans. They don't, not that they don't make you feel very welcome to the country, but they're hostile and they try and intimidate you a little bit. You know, I'll never forget the bus journeys to the ground, and they're throwing cans of beers at the bus and they're giving you the fingers and they're screaming baka, baka, baka. So it is a little bit intimidating. But I think if we've seen anything from sport over the last year, that, you know, the away team, there's a little bit of an advantage with them. The old home teams aren't getting as many wins as you might have expected in previous years. So, you know, if anything, I think it'll probably be in the favour of the Lions team.
Rob, where would a test match, a Lions test series match, in relation to intensity compared to like a Champions Cup final or compared to a Grand Slam winning game, where does the intensity of a test match lie?
I've only played three test matches, so I wasn't involved in any of the tests in 2013. And those three particular test matches in 2009 were and still are probably lauded as one of the most physical test series that's ever been played. You know, so to be honest, that second test in particular, I can't even judge it against anything else. It was just completely on a different stratosphere to any other game that you would have played in.
Yeah. Defo, and that tour though, it did look like the nations, like you guys got on, you have some good friends from that tour, and I know you toured 2013, but you were quite young. Like, what age were you, 23 when you toured to South Africa? Was it around 23, 24?
Yeah, 23. And you know, I think again, one of the best things about the Lions tour is how quickly you build up relationships with the other teams. You know, you go through years of big Six Nations match when you're trying to kick the heads off each other, and the only thing you want to do is win for your team. And you know, people talk about, you know, the ethos of the Lions and how special it is. For me, the most special thing is how quickly you build bonds and relationships with players from those other countries. You know, 2009 was class because Ian McGeachan was head coach. There was still a little bit of an old school element to it. We went out in the piss during the week on Tuesday, Wednesday nights if you weren't involved in the game on Saturday. 2013, that element had completely gone. And I'd say it's even got progressively more professional as the time has gone on. So, you know, definitely for me, that 2009 Lions tour was the most enjoyable tour that I've been on.
And who were the kind of bigger characters on that squad? Like from other nations, you know, you mentioned there you forge relationships very quickly because, you know, you've got that short time, you're coming into such an intense kind of test match period. Who were the bigger characters on that tour?
You know, it's often the ones that surprise you most. You play against guys like the likes of Mike Phillips for Wales, and he's an absolute arsehole on the field, and he's always getting in your face, and everyone's going after him, and no one likes him. And you see his name get selected on the squad announcement, you're like, Jesus Christ, how am I going to put up with this lad for 9 weeks? And then he ends up in one of the most soundest blokes, life and soul of the party, best friends with everyone. And again, that's one of the nice things that people who you have preconceived notions about end up in some of the soundest blokes.
Yeah, definitely. I think there was a group of, you know, Welsh guys on that tour that were, you know, they were a bit older than you, but there was a few superstars there that had done brilliantly at test level for Wales for years. Like Lee Byrne was another. And obviously he started in that first test. And you know, what was running through your head when he got injured?
Do you know what? Lee Byrne was having the season of his life in 2009. He was playing incredible rugby. So I guess I very much went over on that tour, you know, pretty content. Not content, but I knew that there was a good chance I might be playing second fiddle to him. It was my first Lions tour, so I was just delighted to be on it, gotten your Lions gear bag with your initials on it, you feel as if you've just reached the top of the rugby world. You know, you go into the tour 3 or 4 weeks and then all of a sudden you're not satisfied with just being a Lions player. You want to be a test player. And, you know, he went down in the 38th minute of that first half. And, you know, I remember sitting beside Rog on the bench, and sometimes the best time is to go on a field is when you're not told you're going on. You know, someone just comes up to you and says, you're on now. It's not going warm up for 5 minutes. And then that 5 minutes, you have massive amount of head noise and every thought going through your head. So I was lucky that I just got thrown straight in when I wasn't completely expecting it. And it was nice to actually get 2 minutes in the first half, settle in, come in for halftime, and then you go out in the second half after already, you know, had a taste of it and caught your second wind a bit.
Definitely. And then that second test, like, what were your memories from that? You scored one of the, I think it was 10 tries in your whole career in that match.
9, I think.
But, you know, you did score a very important try in that game. But as you said, it was so physical. There was bodies dropping everywhere. What was it like? Because obviously you said there was a lot of red jerseys in the crowd, but I remember how hostile that South African crowd were as well. It must have been a pretty intimidating one.
Yeah, it was really intimidating. That game itself was just barbaric. There was lads falling left, right and centre. There's a few times in your career when you're just happy to be a fullback and at the very back of the field and let all the other 14 players in front of you do the tackling. And that was definitely one of those games. I was like, thank Christ I'm not playing up there.
Definitely, yeah. And then 2013 tour was probably tougher for you, like mentally, because, you know, you were on the tour, but things didn't fall your way probably as much as we talked about Lee Byrne, you know, getting injury, you getting your chance, you taking your chance. 2013, it was probably a flip on that because you were battling with that hamstring injury at the time.
Yeah, it was. I think, you know, the worst thing about 2013 was that in 2009, I already had that taste of being a test Lion and playing in those test series. And, you know, the whole Lions tour, everything is built towards those 3 test matches at the end. You know, I pulled out of, I think we had a league final the day before we left for Australia with a hamstring strain. So I didn't get to play for 3 weeks and I was always playing catch up. At the same time, Lee Halfpenny was playing unbelievably well. He was the out-and-out goal kicker at the time, and, you know, he was up in the high 90s%. So, you know, I knew pretty early on that I wasn't going to get too much of a look into the test team unless he got injured.
Yeah, and I think you kind of need to, you know, get those breaks. I think getting over in a tour like that, there obviously is going to be nailed on starters, but we'll probably all see some guys that we never thought were going to be in the starting side for different reasons. And if there's anyone, you know, who do you think will be, you know, starting at fullback, Rob? And what would you be able to give us what your Lions 15 might be at this stage, or what you think it could be for the first test?
Oh, Jesus, lads, I wouldn't have a clue. I genuinely don't know.
Playing it safe here.
4 hours after the back line.
Yeah, just give us the back line.
Give us the back line. I think Murr will start at 9. Johnny or Owen Farrell at 10. I think Robbie's playing unbelievably well at the moment, so he's in there with a really good shout. I think 13 is very much up for grabs at the moment. In the back three, Anthony Watson is playing really, really well. Johnny May's playing really well. You've got Liam Williams there. Elliot Daly is a class player. He probably hasn't had the season as good as he has in previous years. That English team might be hampered a little bit in terms of their selection on the Lions Tour, given how poor that they have been in the last year. But at the same time, you have a lot of guys there who produce one of the greatest games of rugby in that semi-final against New Zealand. So they will have a lot of credit in the bank. So it's always a tough one. I think, you know, everyone genuinely goes over on a Lions Tour with a clean slate. And depending on how you perform in those first three or four games, the test team, how you think might be now, is always really difficult to what you think it might be. Or what it will be when the time comes.
Yeah, because I remember it was 2009 when Earlsey went on tour.
Yeah.
And you know, he hadn't played a huge amount with Ireland. He got kind of picked off the back of his performances for Munster, who were doing well in Europe at the time. And you know, it just shows that someone, we always talk about bolters, especially in a Lions year, that there could be a couple of fellas that aren't being mentioned in the media and on people's team sheets that could still make it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and you even look at Earlsey and the season that he's had. You know, he's had a really good Six Nations, so he's going to be, you know, banging there in terms of squad selection too.
Yeah, it makes for exciting viewing and a few headaches for sure for that that test coaching ticket. But back to you, Rob, there quickly before we let you go. Just what is the last...
Bearing in mind it's 11:30 here at night time.
Yeah, we're only going to keep you for another 30 minutes, man. No biggie.
Is the roommate asleep or is he awake?
Poor roommate's panned out.
What's the lead in looking like for you guys now? And how is your body feeling? I know you pulled out of the game with a late injury there on Friday.
Yeah, but body was really good at the start. I think I played 4 games on the bounce and was going really well, and then picked up an adductor strain against the Queensland Reds. And one of the problems with the Super Rugby is that, you know, you've 8 games in the space of 10 weeks. So you're always under pressure to try and get back as quickly as you can. You know, and sometimes that has its own issues when you're pushing the boundaries and trying to get muscle soft tissues back as quickly as you can. So I'm still undecided whether I'll be available for selection this week. We're in the semi-final of the competition against the Brumbies. The winners play the Queensland Reds the following week. And then we have the nice task of playing all the New Zealand teams 5 weeks on the bounce, which I can't wait for.
You could be picking up a few soft tissues for those games, could you?
Oh man, that Crusaders game, I might be feeling a bit unwell the night before.
Well, listen, Rob, thanks a million for dialing in, and best of luck over the next few weeks. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, lads. Good to chat.
Cheers, Rob. So, man.
If you haven't already done so, click subscribe on House of Rugby Ireland to never miss a show.
Hey, Sam. How's it going?
Hi, Pat. Yeah, good. You?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Just a couple from me. One is just an Irish one about, I'd heard you speak about Tadhg Byrne saying that for you, he might be more suited in the back row, but Do you reckon there's any other kind of Irish back rows in the mix? Like lads like Jack Conan showed his hand up against England there recently.
I think Josh Van der Fleer has been phenomenal lately. He's been brilliant. And I'm not much of a stats guy, but he made the most metres out of any flanker in the Six Nations. I think he made the most tackles behind Justin Tipperick. I think he's such a good, technically, he's a brilliant seven. Like, he does exactly what a seven needs to do. So that's why I think you've got, this is where it's so tricky. You've got Watson, Curry, Van der Fleer, Tipperick and Navidi have got to fit into three. I don't know how you're going to do that, but I think the most impressive, Byrne and Van der Fleer have impressed me most. I say Byrne at six because I know Gatland, I think he'd be more inclined to pick somebody a bit heavier because I know he really values that weight in the second row. When we used to play in second rows who were a little bit on the light side, he would flag it and say that's somewhere we could target. So I'm not sure. I think he'll be picked as a second row, back row. He can cover both. But as talking as test starters now, he'd definitely have game time, I think, if he goes a second row. But he's probably not one of his front line test starters for second row. So that's why I think the back row might come more into play. So I think players like himself, Maratoji, Courtney Laws, if he goes, they could all find themselves at six. But I think that's why it makes them almost pretty safe picks to go, because you need players who can jump into that back row as well. And those guys do that. So Ty Byrne, for me, is nailed on to go on tour. And he's got a great shout of being a test starter, and I think six could suit him as well.
And Warren was talking about, when he was up last week, about that he's going to add more to his coaching staff. I was wondering if another kind of Lions and Vodafone ambassador, Paul O'Connell, might be a good call for that. You've toured with him before, haven't you?
Yeah, I thought that, putting two and two together, because it makes you wonder whether he'll complete his duties with Ireland and then he'll come on as a line-out coach and forward coach for the second half of the tour. And to have Paulie around the group would be amazing. Even if he didn't coach, just to have him around the group and just have his presence there. And people think he's like a brand new coach. Like, he's done a lot. He's done Munster Academy. He's been with Stade France. I think Stade France was now in France. So he's got, you know, he's been involved in three different environments already. This would be his fourth environment. So he's probably not as new and as novice as people think. And say, you know, Paulie, for the second half of his career at least, he would have been pretty much the line-out coach as a player. So all your top line-out callers, whether it's say the last tour, George Cruz was almost our line-out coach alongside Steve Borthwick. You know, they consult with each other, they go through the moves, and then he then portrays it to the players. So Paul O'Connell has been in that coaching role, even though it's only formally for, say, maybe a few years. He's probably been doing that coaching role for like 10 years. So he's a very experienced line-out operator. So I think he'd be a great addition on tour.
Cheers. Sam, just one last one for me. There's a feasibility study into like a women's Lions tour going on at the moment. Is that something you'd really back, like for a women's game to kind of, you know, a Lions tour would do so much for it, wouldn't it?
Oh, it'd be amazing. I'd absolutely love it, you know. Obviously, right now, we're probably dominated with England players, but then I think the incentive to play rugby would grow massively, and the funding would grow massively in the other nations as well. I think a Ladies Lions tour would be awesome. I would absolutely love to see that, so absolutely.
Perfect, thank you.
Cheers, Pat.
Just listening to that clip of Sam Warburton and going through some of his Lions picks and guys who've been in form, he seems to really rate Josh Van der Fleer.
Yeah, and Josh has been unbelievable. And he's had great performances for Leinster and Ireland and subsequently been named as a nominee for European Player of the Year as well, you know. So if you look at the other Irish nominees in it, with Furlong, Henshaw, and these lads, and Hugo Keenan, and a lot of the lads on it would be shoo-ins for a Lions tour. So there's no reason why Josh wouldn't either. So he's definitely putting his hand up for it.
Yeah, he's been brilliant. And I think, you know, such a reliable player. But I think since that Leinster back row has become one of the most competitive back rows in Europe, if anything, he's kind of thrived and with that competition, and he's kicked on and probably had to kick on, and he, you know, he's got to be in the conversation for maybe being in that back row for the first test against South Africa.
100%. I think, and that's what makes Leinster so good. They have competition right down through. You know, they get four or five different sevens to pick from that are all at international level. You know, and I suppose the same as said with Zeeves coming back to Munster now, he's going to add another layer of competition in that back three. And as a result, not only does it benefit Munster and Ireland, but the back three players within Munster now are all going to have to up their game if they want to stay on the pitch, because Zeebs coming back and he's bringing new ideas and he's bringing a new bit of flair to the game. And it's that will only lead to good competition. You said Josh, like he's a lot of lads jumping at the bit. Will Connor's behind him, and you know that just brings the best out of you, really.
Yeah, Scott Penny as well.
Scott Penny, yeah.
Yeah, but then yesterday, leading into the semi-final, for both Ulster and Leinster this weekend, you know, you've got the likes of Gary Ringrose, James Ryan, Josh Van der Fleer, Jack Conan, then Ulster players like Ian Henderson, Rob Herring, Jacob Stockdale. These guys, you know, you're getting to a stage of the season now where big performances in these bigger games could nail them on to go to the tour, or maybe not to. So it's a great little shop window for these guys, because some other guys in other teams where they're knocked out of the competitions, they're not going to get these opportunities, and these guys will. And I think a few of the names that I mentioned there have some great chances to travel.
Absolutely, yes. As you said, I think that the Lions squad's been named on the 6th of May, and this is another opportunity for those boys, the likes of Stockdale and the likes of Herring, who might be on the edge of selection. And this is, as you said, the shop window for them to get selected. And you know, I was at the Munster Leinster game myself, just gone, and Andy Farrell was sitting in front of me, and with the Lions tour and with Ireland looking to tour Fiji, it's going to open up, especially for a lot of younger players looking to get into an Irish scene. There's going to be a big crop of Irish lads missing from this summer tour, and it's just going to open up the window for more lads to get into an Irish tour. So on both aspects, there's a lot still at stake. Yeah,
definitely. And you know, with that Leinster game, you know, going away to La Rochelle, the fact that they're, you know, and your old mate Raj, you know, he signed on there for another 3 years. He's obviously very happy there, and they're obviously very happy with him. But I'd say he'll be licking his lips going into this game with how well he knows, you know, say Johnny Sexton, and how well he knows all these Leinster players. And I'm sure he'll be using all the knowledge there in the way that they're, you know, cutting up the clips and seeing how they can go after the boys.
He will, of course, yeah. And it's, when Rob Penny took over Munster, we did 10 days out in La Rochelle, and we played him in a pre-season friendly, and it was my first time kind of experiencing rugby in France. Like, I'm playing a French side, and the town is unbelievable. It was a pre-season friendly, you know, and there was 10,000 people at the game, and there were Mexican wave, and I couldn't believe it. It just opened my eyes to be like, oh my god, the calibre of fans and the setup to have here is incredible. And you know, Raj is going in there now, and he's bringing his European experience. You know, La Rochelle never really featured in Europe, and now Raj goes in, who has huge European experience. John O'Gibbs is there, and now they find themselves in a semi-final. And as you said, he knows a lot of the Leinster players. He would have played with Leo Cullen, and he knows how they take. And he's definitely, as we speak now, he's formulating plans now to beat them.
What do you think would be the winning or losing of that match for either team?
I know La Rochelle's home record is pretty good. They went nearly 3 or 4 seasons unbeaten at home before COVID. So it's going to be a tough ask for Leinster. They're going to get huge confidence from getting one over in Exeter away. But I don't know. Look, they rely on a couple of big players. Aldred at number 8, Victor Vito, and then that absolute freak in the centre, Batia. He's like one of the most impressive players I've seen. And he generates go forward ball for them, and that's what they play off. And they've an unbelievable talented back three with Bryce Delane, Raymond Rule, and Dylan Lades. And I suppose they want to keep flow and movement in the game. I think if Leinster can negate Batia, which Robbie Henshaw is going to have to strap both shoulders for that one, I'd say.
Yeah.
And that'll be a start, but They've so much in the bank, it's going to be very hard to stop this.
They're just going to have to contain that free flowing style. You know, you saw in the last 16 in quarter final, the way, you know, when La Rochelle do get going and start playing that game, you know, it's a massively an uphill battle. I think there'll be a big focus from Leinster's perspective this week, and probably back in the last week they're probably talking about it as well, just about stopping that and making sure there's two men connecting together in the tackle area so that they're not getting the ball away, because once they get in behind you, because I think if Leinster can shut that down, that they do have, like, La Rochelle do have a number of forwards there. They're very, very large men. If you keep them moving for, you know, 50 minutes, they do get quite lazy in defence. And I think the way Stewart trains the guys the way Leinster have been playing in the, you know, their better performances this year, I think they can try and pick off those lazy defenders towards the back end of the game.
Yeah, 100%. It's, as you said, they're La Rochelle are happiest when it's unstructured and it's flowing and it's moving and the ball and the balls get moving. And if Leinster can contain them a little bit and bring them to a 60 minutes and 70 minutes and still be in with a shot, then, as you said, these French teams sometimes can get lazy and holes start to appear. And that's where Leinster can, you know, I think out of across Europe, the Irish provinces will be the more fitter sides, and they put a bigger emphasis on their strength and conditioning and their fitness, and been at the last 80 minutes, 90 minutes if needed. So, you know, Leinster can definitely go there if it's required.
Then Ulster away to the Leicester Tigers, you know, in search of their first bit of silverware in quite a while. And I'm sure they've got high hopes, but it's not going to be an easy game for them over there. You know, Leicester also in search of their first silverware, you know,
yeah,
bit of silverware in a long time. Proud, you know, proud club. You know, their home record's very mixed, but they're tough to beat there. They'll all be on the line for both teams.
Yeah, to be the closest to Munster out of all the English sides, I'd kind of compare them to a huge, massive tradition, and they're lacking a bit of silverware for a number of years, which is similar to us in Munster. So it's, look, there's a lot of stake on the line, and it's massive for Ulster as well. You know, it's, as you said, it's a shop window for a lot of lads looking to cement themselves in a Lions team and maybe in an Irish tour. And yeah, I'm not sure how, I couldn't call it, to be honest. It's going to be very tight.
Yeah, it is tough to call. I'm hoping for two Irish wins, though. I don't think that they're both two tough away games, but I think if Ulster and Leinster play well and to the standard they have in the better games they both played this year, I think they'll be too much for both sides. But just the women's Six Nations then, and they finished on a real high, finishing third and beating, you know, Italy 25-5. What did you make the match?
Yeah, look, I thought obviously you'll take a win. I thought they'd beat them by more. I thought there'd be a massive backlash coming off this French game. I thought they'd really put high numbers on them, especially given the conditions, and Donnybrook looked amazing. Mm. Obviously a lot of handling errors kind of negated that, and it's good to see a couple of good performances. I think Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe on the wing, I think she's going to steal the show over the next couple of years. I know there's a lot of talk about Bevan Parsons, but I think, you know, she's an outstanding player. She's still only 26 years old and massive, 98 tries on the seven circuit, like, which is just outrageous. Man. She's one of the best sevens players in the world.
Like,
you know?
Something from a computer game, you know.
Hmm?
It's like them from a
computer. Yeah, she's like
something
from a computer. It's like jumping on rugby. She's just going down the wing, handing people off. But
yeah,
you know, I really think she's going to have a big impact over the next couple of seasons. Yeah.
Then you've got Stacey Flood, who, you know, looks like a really good bet to be the next Irish out half. You know, she seems like a really promising talent too.
Yeah, I suppose another product of the sevens, you know, great athlete, looked very composed, looked very comfortable in the 10 position. I suppose, like, tidy up a couple of, like, position-specific skills there, because it will be neuter, especially at test level, and, you know, you have the makings of a really strong squad going forward.
Yeah, and poor Emer caught a knee to the nose. You think she might have broken her nose, so hopefully she's recovering well. But We'll finish there. Cheers, guys, and cheers to everybody for watching and listening. A big thanks to producer Pat Paul, Anthony Dermott, and everyone that helped getting the show together. This is House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.